The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Hey, good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley, and I am joined in the studio by Ada Nestor. Ada, welcome.
Hello, glad to be here.
Always great to have you here. And once again, as with every show, we've got a lot to cover. So to let folks know what we're going to do here, we're going to first start out, we're going to cover some of this stuff, as we always do in this first segment, that is sort of cutting edge, latest stuff. And then at 12:30, we're going to bring in a mom and her daughter who have been involved in sports in high school and ran up against the issue of biological men in women's sports and what that meant to them. But we're going to go through this a little bit because this is talked about all the time, but I don't think we really get into the personal stories of how these girls are affected and what it really means to them. So we're going to get into that a bit. And then at 1 o'clock, we're going to have Pennsylvania Treasurer Stacey Garrity join us. Now, Stacey, you know, and many people know, is going to run for governor. She's running for governor now for 26.
And endorsed. She has the Pennsylvania Republican endorsement.
Yep, she's endorsed, and so her campaign is on. It's on now. And so we're gonna talk to her at 1 o'clock. And at 1:30, we're going to have on a gentleman named Randall Jefferson. And those that listen to the station a lot know Randall because he follows us. Randall's show is called Tone and Tenor, and he comes on right after we leave the air at 2 p.m. So we talk to Randall often in the 5 minutes between segments.
if you could see us breaking down these cameras right to try and get out of here before he gets in, it's wild.
Making room for his show. Mm-hmm. But today we're going to bring him in, and we're going to talk to Randall because we really want to understand from his perspective, what does he see as what happened on Tuesday, on Election Day, and what does he see going forward, and sort of, get a little bit of his insight into what's going on in Philadelphia. Now, Randall's been involved in sort of the political landscape of Philadelphia for a very long time. So I'm looking forward to get some great insights from him on that. Now, first of all, if you're listening to us now, you're listening to us on the air, on the radio here in Philadelphia on WWDB AM 860. That's great. You can also, though, if you've got friends that want to listen that can't find that or can't reach that station, because we have people literally all over the country listening, you can go to WWDB AM 860's website and click the Listen Live button in the upper right corner. You can also follow us by tracking us on Twitter, where we are live streaming. That's right, X, where we're live streaming. And you can catch us on live streaming on Facebook right now, and we're live streaming on Rumble. So we're up in as many places as we can. Now, tomorrow, typically, after the show's done and processed, we will put out segments of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We'll put it out on Amazon Music. We'll be up on various platforms. So watch for it if you miss something today or you want to hear something again. I had a guy that listens a lot who was saying the other day that he went back and re-listened to our last segment that we did with Mark Mitchell of Rasmussen. And listening to it a second time got a lot out of it that you kind of missed the first time because we're moving kind of fast.
Yeah.
So you can always go back and catch a replay afterwards. But what we're facing now as a nation is a time of incredible challenge and division and all these problems. We've seen this election in 24 go one direction and, a hard MAGA win across all the swing states. And then we come into this next year and have this devastating loss for the Republican Party, who may be trying to figure out what happened, or maybe they don't care because, it's part of defeating MAGA. That remains to be seen. One thing is clear, of course, the Republicans in Congress are not leaning into the MAGA fight. They're not excited about our agenda because they're doing nothing but sit there smugly. I mean, they shut down the government, but that that they didn't use any of that time to advance the agenda.
Right.
You know, they just shut it down and then stood around and said, oh, that's the Democrats. Well, what did we get out of that? What did we win with that? Nothing. So with the shutdown, with the reluctance of Congress to take any action, you know, we're really in we're sort of in a weird time. Now, one of the things we're going to do next week, we're going to have another Keystone Town Hall. We're going to do it Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the Desmond Hotel in Malvern, where we do them frequently. And in that town hall, we're going to talk a bit more in detail about some of the numbers and, you know, the turnout and how people voted and you know, look into some of these amazing statistics, like the extra 500,000 voters that showed up in, you know, New Jersey, who didn't vote in the presidential year, but showed up the next year, you know, which we decided it was probably because they were just lost for about a year. And
then
they just found the precinct.
Took a wrong turn.
Wrong turns. They happen, you know. So so we're going to go into that in a little more detail in the town hall and talk a bit about what really does come next. But the one thing that is crystal clear is that if the conservative movement, if the Republican Party, if anybody that's not a Marxist wants to see this country move forward on a path that's going to work, they have got to get behind this MAGA agenda. These Republicans that run around smugly saying, well, I don't like Donald Trump. Well, you know what? I don't care if you like Donald Trump.
Yep.
I really don't. Couldn't possibly care less. Here's what we know. There isn't another presidential candidate that's run in the last 40 years that would do what Donald Trump has done with the, for example, the immigration, you know, locking down the border. There isn't another candidate that would have locked down the border. Not one. So whether or not you like Donald Trump or feel morally superior to him or think you're intellectually superior to him, and I'm telling you, these people do.
Oh, I know.
If you're sitting out in, you know, Southern Chester County, you know, in your very comfortable home saying, well, you know, I don't need to be associated with somebody like that. It's because you're watching foolish media. You've been programmed to act against your own interests and the interests of your family.
Yep.
So how about this? How about instead of sitting around smugly thinking that you're better than the president, maybe you start looking at the policy issues that have been plaguing this country for years. You know, we talk about immigration all the time, but we don't really always talk about what it means. So this H-1B visa thing that's now come to light, right?
I mean, coming to a head. How
long we've been talking about this?
Forever.
You know, years.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah.
And suddenly people are aware that there's an H-1B visa problem. Well, here's the story. H-1B visas were approved in an immigration act that was passed in around 1990. The first year, there were about 8,000 that came in. And there's this sort of cap at 85,000. It's been at millions, 2 million, 2.1 million of people that have come in officially on that. Then they bring their family members.
Right.
And they come here to have children.
And where do they live? What do they do for housing and for...
Well, turns out they like to live in homes.
Yeah.
And so they brought a bunch of demand for housing.
Yeah.
At this point, 2/3 of Silicon Valley's employees are H-1B visa holders.
Yep.
So what you're to believe isn't that they needed a smattering of people to supplement the skill sets and work ethic of Americans. No, no, no. You're to believe that Silicon Valley could not survive without H-1B visas because Americans are stupid and lazy. And this anti-American, that, you know, this idea that Americans are bad, this is really only developed in the last 20 years or so, where we've been programmed into believing that somehow our people aren't capable of, what, programming Apple software? You can only do that with people from India. Now, when I say India, let's keep in mind that if you look at the H-1Bs being issued, 72% roughly, 71-72% are going to India. And then you've got about 12 to 15%, let's say, going to the Chinese. So what you're telling me is that while this program, the H-1B visa program, is designed to get the best and brightest from around the world, it turns out the only place you can get them is India and China.
Right.
They're not bringing in people from Germany or Switzerland. They're not bringing in people from Argentina or Brazil. It's just India and China, and that's it. Now, that's preposterous.
Yep.
What we have is a recruiting system that brings these folks in and brings them in because they work for less. You know, there are people that are 5 years experienced in IT working in the United States who are still considered class one, meaning entry level. So they may be working, say, for 10 or 15% below the entry level salary, But compared to a 5 or 6 year experienced American, they're working for tens of thousands less than what they would cost. And when you look at where they are relative to the median income in their market, they could be dramatically below median income. It is about saving money. It's not about talent.
Right.
The other thing that happens, and once they come in and they get situated, then they begin to outsource more and more work overseas. And, of course, India is the capital of outsourcing. So if you look at FedEx or American Airlines, some of these other places, look at Walmart, you see massive amounts of outsourcing to India. And it's, you know, it is taking employment and income away from Americans. So now we have American citizens who can't get, can't get employment or can't get employment at the level they should.
Yeah.
But the folks overseas are streaming in here. And, of course, the big tech people went to Trump and said, you have to let us have H-1Bs because if you don't, you know, we're going to have to hire Americans. And we all know Americans suck.
God forbid.
Right. Now, Trump made a comment the other day, which was unfortunate, when he said the woman from Fox News.
Yep.
Whatever her name is. He said, you know, well, we have to have these. Laura Ingraham. Yep. We have to have these people come in from foreign countries. We have to have these people come in from foreign countries because they are. We got an audio issue.
Because we don't have the strength in the American citizens to do those jobs. We don't have the intelligence. That was the gist of the conversation, which is just untrue on its face. We certainly have the talent and the intelligence here in our nation to fill these positions. I think I just saw yesterday there are active lawsuits happening right now with companies or against companies who were exclusively hiring H-1Bs and staying away from American citizens.
Yes.
In America. So,
yes.
You know, we are at a head here on this issue. We have taken so much away from the youth in America. And that brings us to Mamdani and what happened in New York City and the youth vote. They're furious. Their futures have been thrown away. And now they're left trying to figure out a path and a way forward, looking at people who don't seem to care about their futures at all.
You know, you're absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is that when you think about Trump voters who then flipped over and voted for Mamdani, what they're saying is this system has failed. Now, we've talked about this at length. We talked about it at length with Mark Mitchell, who then went on and did a segment on...
he's been everywhere this week. I've been watching him everywhere. Yeah. He's been fantastic.
So if you go back, I sent clips out this week from a podcast we did with him, you know, a show. He was on a segment
I saw that.
A couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And I sent them out from last week or week before.
Yeah.
They're the same.
Yeah.
I mean, the story. So if you go back, you can see that we built this story over time. We built this story and built this story. And it just is what it is. It's true.
We didn't make it up. We weren't exaggerating. We weren't trying to mislead people. We were trying to tell you the truth while other people were misleading you. That's the reality of this. And you know what? No one likes it. We're early. We're right. And we're early. And everyone hates us for it. And then months later or a year later, they turn around and say, oh, you were right. Oh, you had that right already. Well, maybe instead of fighting against us, you work with us and we get somewhere and have some victories.
But that's right.
Until then, we'll continue to lose.
And they talk about unity and how, well, it's unity. Wait. Looking at facts and data and circumstances and analyze them effectively, that you come out with answers that are true, isn't bucking unity.
Yeah, and don't accuse me of being, you know, unloyal or not united when it's the other people coming after us for telling the truth, calling us names, telling people not to work with us, not to come to our town halls, not to come on to our radio show, who are actually, you know, creating this environment of hatred or animosity. It isn't.
Right. No, it's not. And you know, the Republican Party can ignore what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, and they are.
And they are.
Yeah.
And they can be irrelevant forever.
Forever.
And that's where it's headed. If there is not a dramatic shift in the way this party reacts to things, in the way this thing works, if they don't get there, then the Republican Party is going to be irrelevant. And you could forget about this idea of winning races. It's not going to matter.
Now, look at what just happened. focusing on the method of voting instead of the issues that people are concerned about, the policies that they want to see implemented, the decisions that are literally affecting our day-to-day lives and the bills that we're paying and the way that we're able to survive with our family. Our party is kind of adrift right now, focusing on the method of voting instead when everyone wants policies. People want fighters. That is why Trump is so effective. That is why he has been successful. We want people. We want to get off our couches
yes.
to support people who are fighting for what we want to see.
And
but
when,
if you don't, if you're lazy, if you say nothing, if you do nothing, no one's getting off the couch for you.
No, they're not. And when you look at, again, Mom Donnie, he's the one that said, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix it for you. And if you compare him to the other characters that were running in that race, again, it was the guy who killed Grandma.
Right.
Right. Cuomo. Mario Cuomo's little boy.
Right. Really? Everyone was supposed to come out and support Cuomo? That is the craziest
yeah.
thing I've ever seen in my life after everything we went through with COVID.
That's what you had to do. You had to go support Cuomo. And if not him, Curtis Sliwa, who, again, I describe as a cartoon character.
Right.
Listen, I don't think he's a bad guy. But this isn't the kind of guy that people are going to race to vote for. And you're completely ignoring the reality of what's happening with this massive number of voters who helped Trump get elected, which is the youth. These are Democrats and independents, and they voted for Donald Trump. They do not trust or like the Republican Party, and they're not voting on brand.
Yeah.
They're not loyal Democrats. They're not loyal Republicans, and they're not conservative.
And they're not just going to vote because you have an R after your name. That is not the way life works anymore. The information field is wide and full of voices. There is no more MSM control, narrowing everyone into the same small path. It doesn't work anymore.
No. And so if you decide you want to, say, win races, you've got to be talking to those kids. And how do you talk to them? Here's the funny thing. You use exactly the same agenda that you use with people who are, say, 35 to 55, 55 to 75, and 75 and above. You use the American First agenda. You expose things like the H-1B visa scam, shut it down. And now that we're seeing massive layoffs from these large corporations, they're blaming AI, but it's not all AI. Some of this is just normal cost cutting, and some of this is that they're struggling to maintain these extreme valuations. So any loss of income, any down cycle, any contraction of earnings has a significant impact on stock values because multiples are so big. They used to, a company used to trade at 7 times, probably trades at 14 now.
Right.
So they will do anything to keep their earnings up. And if that means that they have to go cut employees they need, they cut them. And then they'll go outsource to India or pull in an H-1B at a lower number.
Yeah.
So I read a story today on a post from Mark Mitchell about a guy whose father, who had been in IT for years, got replaced by an H-1B. Then he got another job, but it was with somebody who'd come in on an H-1B. They immediately eliminated him and hired only H-1Bs thereafter.
Yeah.
And another guy who said, when I was being laid off, I was told I have to train my replacement from India, who's an H-1B. Mm-hmm. And after that, there were 3 H-1Bs that got hired before I got finished and left the job. So we've got to start dealing with real reality, not this game that we play where we think H-1Bs are a good thing because they're supplementing critical skills. They're not. It's about lowering wages. Now, you take that same theory and approach it or apply it to semi-skilled, non-skilled labor, and what's happened in the mass migration movement where we've driven up, again, the cost of housing, sometimes funded by government. We've driven down wages. We are squeezing this middle class. It is being milked so that the very rich and that the near-retirement teams, the population, can just have more cash.
And then the answer to that from people like Ben Shapiro just this week is, maybe if you can't afford to live where you grew up, you shouldn't get to live there anymore. You should have to go live somewhere else. That expectation, that American dream of being able to live where you were born, to raise your family, where you and your family were raised, is apparently unreasonable, and you should abandon that hope.
Right.
That's have that right.
No, you have basically no rights. You have no expectation. You should have no expectation of having a life anywhere near what you were told you were going to have or anything like what your parents had. Forget it. They had a little lake house. Forget about it.
Yeah, a vacation home.
They had a little cabin in the woods. I'm not talking about a luxury home.
No, right.
A cabin in the woods.
Uh-huh.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to afford the car you have to buy. And eventually they're going to tell you, listen, Waymo is going to take care of the car. You don't get a car.
Yeah.
So if we don't shift the country to serving its citizens, we are facing what is going to be a very dark time. These kids are not conservative. They're not even educated in policy.
Right.
They just know they're getting hammered on all fronts. It's not just kids 18 to 25 or 18 to 29. It is, we're talking about people that are 18 to 40.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we learn every day, their educations, they didn't learn civics. They don't know how the government works. They just know they're not getting taken, that they're facing all these insurmountable problems, right? That they can't seem to get over. And so they think it's capitalism that's doing it. So when somebody says communism, like, well, might as well try that. I mean, it's a funny hat because they all wear those funny hats, but might as well try that.
But in their mind, because of the lack of appropriate education, they are truly of the belief that capitalism has failed them, when that's not actually what failed them. And what we're living in is a sort of corrupt capitalism where some people are doing very well while the rest, you know, suffer.
That's exactly right.
So, but they don't understand that. They are told we are a capitalist society and country, so it must be capitalism's fault.
It's got to be. Yeah. It's got to be. Now, this hypocrisy of this fake capitalism we're now pretending to live in is, of course, even more clear with this COP30. So for those that don't know, COP30 is a meeting among environmentalists. Right,
these where they take their private planes and they fly to some beautiful location for their 5-star resort, you know, stay to discuss how they need to change the lifestyles for all of us.
Well, that's exactly right. So what they did this time is they set up the COP30 meeting in a remote village in Brazil that is inaccessible.
Yep.
So I don't even think they could get private planes in that close. So they needed a road. So they mowed down 8 miles of Brazilian rainforest, uh-huh. Mowed it down, paved it so that the COP30 people could get in there. There are 50,000 people going to COP30 this year. 50,000 people traveling all over the world, spewing carbon while they go. But it's okay because it's them and they're special.
Well, and they're going to talk about how to reduce the carbon for all of us. So like them spending a little extra carbon to do so is morally appropriate. Because they're trying to solve the problem, of course.
That's right. And we're supposed to believe then that the sea is rising. But, of course, everybody puts up pictures of the Statue of Liberty. The sea's the same for 100 years. We're supposed to believe that CO2 is this problem. And I've been looking at some of these, this incredible social media push they did this week to reestablish this CO2 frenzy after Bill Gates admitted that it wasn't real.
Right.
Right, which we talked about last week. It's like, well, listen, I need electricity now, so I guess I got to drop the CO2 hoax.
Which is the craziest part of all of this, by the way. The whole reason he did this was not because he came to the, you know, realization that we've all had all along that this was wrong and inaccurate and incorrect. No. He came to this realization because he needs electricity.
Right. That's exactly right. And because he thinks he's going to make a lot of money in AI.
Yeah.
I mean, that really, in the end, that's the real win for him is this cash in the AI systems. So they mow down part of the rainforest. They move all these people off into the jungle, into this remote village to have this, you know, extraordinary experience. And in doing so, they destroy local economies. So there's a guy that harvests berries. I think it's acai berries or something along the way. His complete living is gone. They mowed down his village. They mowed down his business, his ability to harvest, what he was harvesting. It's all gone. So that these people that are going to tell us how we have to sacrifice Western civilization on the altar of environmentalism and carbon.
Are you saying they paved over paradise and put up a parking lot?
That's exactly what they did. And now I'll have that song in my head for the next 4 hours.
It's been stuck in my head for the last 4 minutes of this conversation. So I had to get it out.
So they do this thing, and then they push these issues so that we're not supposed to have cars. We're not supposed to have energy.
You'll own nothing and be happy.
That's right. And it's got to be the United States and the EU that are destroyed for this, have to be destroyed. However, if you actually look at carbon output,
it's not us.
India is growing at a rapid rate. India is below, according to these calculations, take them for what they're worth. They're lower than the U.S. and the EU, but they're growing rapidly. China is, 2.5 times the United States and growing rapidly. Now, China's also investing huge amounts in solar cells. They've got a big desert. They're filling it with solar cells. Well, that's for street cred. They've been building coal-fired electrical generation for years. But here's the problem. They don't have the coal. They don't have the thermal coal reserves they need. They buy it from Australia. So now they have a political and logistics issue that they can't generate the electricity with their own resources. So part of the reason they're building solar is because it makes all these globalists feel good and happy. And part of the reason they're building solar is because they don't want to be exposed to ships going down that have energy that they need. They don't want to be sending checks overseas when they could just have solar cells in their villages and or in their desert. And to be clear, the solar is much more productive. The wind power is much more productive than it used to be. It is still high cost, intermittent, and unreliable as your base load. So if the United States wants to fix some of what we're talking about, one of the problems that is going to be affecting not just kids 18 to 29 or 39 or whatever, everybody, is certainly the issue of energy. And what we're seeing with our power costs is that it's growing dramatically. So we're going to roll out AI much faster than they can roll out any power generation. We've got a grid that needs help. It is antiquated. We've got power generation that's not keeping up with demand, and we're introducing huge amounts of new demand. That is going to drive up power bills. There's just no way around it. So it's yet another attack. So you've got the immigration that's driving down wages and driving up the costs of living. You've got energy costs that are going up. Now, Trump has done a great job on trying to mitigate that with oil and gas, but he can't create power plants out of the soil, out of the farm fields. So we have to adopt this MAGA agenda to fix this country so that we can then maybe help some other countries, like maybe Europe. We have to, if the Republican and conservative collective community wants to be effective going forward, they have to get rid of these people in the Republican Party who are just opportunists, who are running it purely because they get to pass out money with consultants and give people bad advice who lose. We've got to get to a point where they actually are ideological folks who want to see this nation improve and who have a vested interest in the actual agenda, have a vested interest in the outcome for voters. If we do that, then the Republican Party can restabilize, the United States can get back on track, and the middle class could get some relief.
So what you're saying is it's time to fire up the primary machine and get to work, because these people have all had the last 9 months, 10 months, 11 months to show us what they were willing to do, along with the shutdown where they could have really acted, and they didn't. And now we're hearing the hysteria over the senators who were spied on. They were spied on by the government they were elected to, slipping in a provision. We're being yelled at about January 6th. All of these things, they haven't done anything. They send strongly worded letters. They go on Fox News. They sit down for the talk shows. They complain, but they do nothing. And what did they do? What everyone's talking about this provision they slipped into the reopening, the continuing resolution. No one's talking about what they gave Big Alcohol this week. There's a huge gift to Big Alcohol that goes into an effect in a year if these guys don't get together by eliminating and reducing the hemp products that have been coming out, which are an alternative to alcohol. They Right. slipped a provision into the bill that it'll be banned, anything intoxicating. Well, who did they do that for?
Right.
They did that for Budweiser, allegedly. They did it for Big Alcohol to make sure that they're not losing any profits out to the hemp and marijuana field. So, there's a lot of things they're worried about that don't seem to align with what the American people are worried about. And I don't see it changing. I don't see them turning around next week and coming to the table and saying to Trump, what can we do to solidify these executive orders? What can we do to fix our elections? What can we do to stop these illegal aliens from registering to vote and voting in our elections? What can we do? I don't see them doing that. I think next year we primary all of them.
Well, it would be great. Now,
it'd be fun.
One of the challenges we also have is resources.
Yes, that's the problem.
And we'll talk about this a little bit on Thursday night at the town hall.
Yeah.
But apples
to oranges.
You're not going to turn this situation around simply by running good campaigns. We've proven that. You're not going to turn it around simply by running good campaigns. That's been proven. To turn this around, and by this I mean, let's say, Southeast Pennsylvania, where we've got increasing taxes by the year, and I mean dramatically increasing. If you look at what counties, townships, and schools are doing, they're not going up 1 or 2%. They're going up 9 to 23% or 24% at the county level. They're going up dramatically. So, you know, we've got to, if we want to turn this around, we've got to get a hold of the real issues, start addressing those issues, run candidates who actually care about those issues. And there have been some great candidates run in these last 3 years, but they've gotten decimated in part because they also lack resources. So while, you know, the party pumps unlimited amounts of capital into trying to convince people to vote by mail, the reality is they're not funding campaigns. They're not funding messaging. The donors aren't supporting groups outside of the party that are driving messaging. It's time for the conservative slash Republican world to have a war council and figure out what's important and figure out what the system and strategy is going to be. Set aside the silly strategies that we follow that have not worked and get serious about Southeast Pennsylvania specifically, where you've got five counties where the Republican Party has no effective presence, can't win races, can't affect policy. And where the conservatives have no voice, even within the Republican Party. The Republican Party pushes the MAGA folks to the side, shuts out conservatives because they really just are not ideological. If that doesn't change, then Southeast Pennsylvania continues to move left until it's so expensive to live here that nobody can, until the system starts to break, until what's going on in your schools becomes so incredibly radical, as we've seen from school board after school board across Southeast PA, it becomes so incredibly radical that you won't even recognize the education, or rather indoctrination, that your children are getting. Now, you know, one of the issues that is really been a challenge with this education thing has been the idea of biological men or boys being in girl sports. Now, for the life of me, I can't figure out how that became a thing. Like, it never occurred to me that we would have girls who are, you know, typically not as heavy or maybe not as strong, competing with boys. But that's where we are. And so
I took a stance on that in 2021 that, you know, got me dragged in my community. And my stance was perfectly rational and simple. 70% of the sports scholarships already go to male students. Women already only get 30% of the scholarships to go to college for athletics. We shouldn't be cutting into that. That was my stance in 2021, which was, I thought, a really reasonable stance. And here we are in 2025. And it is insane that we are even having these conversations or needing to fight over it.
Yeah, it really is.